Erev Shabbos to all of my friends who are joining me on the Zoom for my favorite 30 minutes of the week, our favorite 30 minutes of the week, three ideas to get us energized and ready for Shabbos Kodesh here in BRS around the world. Thank God so many people join us now on Friday mornings, and I hope I give us food for thought, some beautiful Divrei Torah to enhance our Shabbos tables and to enhance and to elevate the conversations every single Shabbos at our Shabbos table. So again, I want to thank everyone. If anyone's interested in sponsoring a future class, please be in touch with me or the Shul office. Obviously, sponsorships are welcome. So here we go. Three ideas in 30 minutes. This Parsha happens to be, parenthetically, might be my favorite Parsha in the Torah, although I think I've said that more than once, but it's jam-packed. How could you choose three ideas? It's almost impossible. It's almost unfair. I actually toyed for a second of going with four ideas this week, but I know that would be a violation of the rules. I'm not allowed to do that. So I will stick true to my word, but know that there's so much more out there. It's like the Mishnah in Yoma says that on Yom Kippur, that when they used to show the Torah, they had to announce, there's so much more in this Torah. Don't think that it's just what we're reading here this morning. That's my message to you. This Torah is Parsha, so jam-packed. I could spend 6 hours just on the Akedah, but I'm not going to spend a minute on that because I figured most of you are already familiar with many Divrei Torah about that. Here we go. Idea number one comes from a few different parshios, but is really centered in our parsha this morning, and that is the character of Lot. I've been picking on Lot now for a few weeks. I happen to be enamored by Lot and by his placement in the Torah, what role he plays in the Torah. And I want to share with you a magnificent idea that I came across. It is not mine. It is Rabbi Shmuel Golden's. It's found in his Sefer, but it is beautiful and magnificent. First time we meet Lot is in last week's parsha. Avram and Lot each have an enormous amount of wealth, and there's a classic showdown. Avram looks at Lot and says, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. And so Lot and Avram part and each go their separate ways. And when the Torah tells us that Lot goes, it says he goes to Sodom. The Torah tells us, Vayehal ad Sodom. Now there's two anomalies in that phrase. Number one is it says Vayehal, which implies much more of a transient form of living. The description that you and I would have anticipated is Vayeshev, or Lagur, that he lived, or he dwelt. It's not what it says. It says Vayehal, that he pitched a tent. Pitching a tent means that I think I'm just going to be here for a short period of time. I'm not going to be here for a long period of time. The other anomaly in that pasuk is that it says Ad Sodom. Right? You wouldn't say I'm going until Boca Raton. You'd say I'm going to Boca Raton. No one would come. As they're coming down I-95, they hit Del Rey, they're about to hit Boca, they say, okay, I'm stopping right here, now I'm in Boca Raton. No, if you're going to Boca Raton, what do? You go into Boca Raton. Lot does the opposite. Vayehal, more of a transient, and Ad Sodom. He goes until Sodom, but he does not go into Sodom. And perhaps what Lot's intention was, is to try to do something very difficult, which is to live and to be in the culture of Sodom, and yet be far away enough from Sodom not to be affected and impacted by it. So Vayehal ad Sodom, Lot was going there, not permanent, just here for a short time, and he's not even going into Sodom, he's dabbling in Sodom a little bit. One parak later, we meet Lot in Sodom again. Pasuk tells us, Vayikhu es Lot, ves rechusho ben achi Avram, Vayelchu v'hu yoshev bis Sodom. One parak later, Lot goes from Ad Sodom to Bisdom. Now he's not on the outskirts of the city. He's no longer trying to live in two worlds at once, where he's on the outskirts, but still not affected by Sodom. No, now he's Bisdom. Now he is no longer on the outskirts of the city, but now he is a full-fledged, card-carrying member of Sodom and its culture in one very short parak. And now we come to this week's Parsha. We meet Lot again. Vayavo Shnei HaMalachim, a pasuk we're going to come back to in our second idea this morning. Vayavo Shnei HaMalachim, the two angels come. They have just visited Avram Avinu. They've given him and Sarah the greatest news in the world. They're finally going to have a child. And they come to Sodom. V'Lot Yoshev Bishar Sodom. And Lot is sitting at the gateway to the city. Now who sits at the gateway of the city? Rashi tells something very interesting. Rashi says, you want to know who sits at the gateway of the city? Only the most prominent, respected, and deserving officials. In other words, the elite of the society and the culture, they are the ones who sat where Lot was sitting. And so in three very short story, Lot has gone from being on the outside to not just living in Sodom, but he's living in the epicenter of Sodom. And now he's taken one final step to be fully entrenched in Sodom and in its culture. And so is Lot a bad person or is Lot not a bad person? Is Lot evil or is Lot not evil? These are questions that I struggle with every time I read these parshios, and I think it's so rich for conversation. I believe, based on this insight of Rabbi Golden, that Lot was not evil, that Lot was weak, Lot was vulnerable, Lot was defenseless, Lot was naive. That, as we would say in English, Lot wanted his cake. He tried his cake. He wanted to eat it too, whatever that phrase is, right? He had his cake, he wanted to eat it too. Okay? In other words, Lot tried to live in two worlds at once. He wanted to both be a little bit in Avram's world, where he's going to treat people nicely and kindly, and he was also in the Sodom world of selfishness and corruption, where you trade your daughters for just a little bit of protection. And so Lot begins very innocently on the outskirts of the city. He tells himself, you know what, I'll be okay. Sodom's not going to affect me. I'm just going to dabble in their culture, but I'm not really going to be in their culture. I'm going to remain an outsider. And in one very short parak, Lot quickly learns that you cannot dabble in Sodom and not be affected by it. And so his plan fails. And in the process, the Torah, by telling us a lot about Lot, is spilling ink as a cautionary tale about the effects of our external environment on us. That we should never think that I live in a culture, that I live in an environment, that I expose myself to certain influences, but it's okay, because I can live in two worlds at once. Now, we do try to do that. Certainly modern Orthodox Jews, we try to walk that tightrope. We try to be in a modern world filled with Western values and Western civilization and ideas and thoughts, and we also try to live in a world of Torah. And the story of Lot is a cautionary Torah to all of us to be careful. Because it is a hard balance to strike. I didn't say it's an impossible balance. It is a hard balance to strike. And if you don't constantly have your antennas up and your barriers up, it's very easy to fall prey to the same exact mistakes that Lot made. And so idea number one is the cautionary tale of Lot. That Lot surmised that he would be able to live in two worlds at once. That he would be able to live in Avram's world and the world of Sodom. That he would be able to go ad Sodom. That he would just be able to dabble in the world of Sodom, but it wouldn't influence him and impact him. And Lot quickly learns that unless you're extremely careful of the influences that you surround yourself with, the things that you watch, what you allow in your house, the things that you read, the things that you allow you and your family to be exposed to very quickly, it's hard not to be influenced and impacted by society around you, by the community that you live in, by the group of friends that you choose to surround yourselves with, right? Your Shabbos table becomes much easier, again, in the time when people had guests, but your Shabbos table becomes much easier to control and to keep filled with Kedusha if the other people around you want the same thing as you do. So our external environment, our surroundings, deeply and profoundly affect who we are. And if we aspire to be something, then we have to surround ourselves with like-minded people who are going to equally push us and inspire us in the right direction. Lot learns that the hard way. And by the Torah teaching us about that, it is warning us, it is cautioning us, not that it's impossible, but that it's very difficult, and that you and I always, always, always have to be extremely careful to make sure that even as we expose ourselves to culture, and even as we expose ourselves to society and what's on TV and the media and the news, that we protect ourselves. And that's ultimately what Torah, that's what mitzvos, that's what emunah, that's what Judaism does. Judaism is our shield to allow in what we think is acceptable, but also to give us the tools and the strength and the wherewithal, the conviction, the determination to fight off things that we don't want to allow to enter into our houses, to our vocabularies, to what becomes mainstream for us, should always be a little bit different from what we are seeing and experiencing in society around us. That is idea number one. I think a beautiful insight by Rabbi Golden. Idea number two comes from an idea. We're going to do a lot of YU Torah now, because I just gave you a little bit of a knock, a little bit of the hardships of modern Orthodoxy. So now we'll go to some YU Torah. This is an idea I first heard 18 years ago. Wow, I'm old. 18 years ago when I was first in Rabbi Willig Shir. And when I was first in Rabbi Willig Shir, Rabbi Willig always gave over a little vort on the Parsha on Thursday. And he said this idea, I thought it was magnificent, and I want to build upon it a little bit. You'll notice at the beginning of the Parsha this week, Vayisa Einav, Avram lifts up his eyes, Vayar, and he sees, Vihine Shlosha Anashim Nitzavim Alav. And there are three Anashim. There are three people that are standing there. And Avram, of course, Vayaratz, Vayikrasam, he gets up, and with great haste, he goes to greet them. Now, parenthetically, Masil Sharm points out that this is the source, or the first source, for that everything our Avos and Imos did was with alacrity. That what defined them was the swiftness, the excitement, the enthusiasm, the passion with which they fulfilled their service to Hashem. They never walked around sluggish. They were never, oh, I'm okay, right? No, they were like, let's get ready to go every single day because they lived here for a purpose. If anyone watched Behind the Bima this week and they saw Rabbi Kotlarski, they got a little bit of a sense of what it means to live constantly with a sense of mission and a sense of purpose and how it drives you to continue to improve the world and to contribute to the world and to better the lives of other people. So that's Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was the first Chabadnik. He gets up early and he's running. You'll notice the language in the Pasuk is Vayar, he sees them, Vihine Shlosha Anashim, and they are three people. Now we know, of course, that they are not people. Medrash tells us this, right? We know that they are the angels that are coming to give Avram and Sarah good news, and yet the Torah calls them Anashim. Those same angels, just a little bit longer, leave Avram and Sarah. Where do they go? They go to Sodom. And Lot greets them when they go to Sodom. And there, when Lot greets them, the Pasuk tells the following, Vayavo, Shnei, Hamalachim, Sodoma. That these two angels come to Sodom, Ba'erev, Velot Yoshei Bishar, Sodom. I told you we'd come back to this Pasuk. Lot is now, of course, fully entrenched in Sodom culture. Vayar Lot, Lot sees them, Vayakam Likrasam, and he gets up to greet them. Now, what is the main difference between the first Pasuk that I read at the beginning of the Parsha and Pasuk number two, where we re-greet the angels and they're now in Sodom? What's the significant difference between them? The significant difference is that by Avram they're called Anashim, they're called people, but by Lot they're called Malachim, they're called angels. Now it's the same group of people, right? One dropped off. Okay, we know the angel Gavriel leaves, but it's the same two people that were by Avram they're called Anashim, and by Lot, they're called Malachim. Explains Rabbi Willig the following. For Avram, chesed was never dependent on who you are. Avram didn't care if you were a tzaddik yesoda olam, if you were a great righteous person. Avram didn't care if you were a wealthy person. Avram didn't care if his doing chesed for you was going to give him honor, whether he was going to have a benefit as a result of it. Avram didn't care. You know why Avram did chesed? Because it's the right thing to do. Avram wanted to help someone else. And he didn't care how prominent the person was, how insignificant the person was, whether the person was poor, whether the person was a widow, whether the person was wealthy. He didn't care about anything. You were just an Anashim. You could have been a regular Joe Schmo. And you know what? Avram was getting up and he was doing chesed for you, not just lazily, but with alacrity and zealousness and excitement and that passion. Lot is the exact opposite. The only reason, says Rabbi Willig, that Lot did chesed was because Vayavo Shnei HaMalachim, was because he saw two really prominent people coming his way, and Lot said, maybe if I do something for them, I'll get something in return. Maybe if I do something for them, I'll get just a little bit of kavod. I'll get a little bit of honor as a result of the kindness that I will bestow upon them. Maybe they'll do something nice for me in return. You know, maybe if I invite this guest, he'll bring a nicer bottle of wine than the other guest, so let me go and invite them. Maybe if I do this act of chesed, someone else will find out about it, and people will think that I'm a big, important, good person. So I want people to know about the chesed that I'm going to do. That, explained Rabbi Willig, is the difference between Avram and Lot. Lot did chesed because they were malachim, because they were important, because they were prominent, and therefore he thought he could get something as a result. For Avram, it was Anashim. Avram didn't care who you are or how prominent you were or how insignificant. He didn't care anything. He just did chesed because it's the right thing to do. And I think, of course, within that is an enormous message and lesson for every single one of us, that we have to do chesed not just for the people who are going to bring us honor or are going to do favors for us in return. No, we do chesed because it's the right thing. The greatest acts of chesed are the acts that nobody knows about. If you want to know what gives the Ribono Shel Olam the most nachas, it's when you do something nice for another person that nobody in the world will ever know about. It's why, by the way, at a funeral, we call it a chesed shel emes. It's the truest form of chesed. Because when I participate in the burial of another human being, I know with certainty that I'm never going to get anything returned from that person. They'll never bring me that bottle of wine. They'll never bring me flowers. They'll never do anything. I'm just doing it, you know why? Because the right thing to do. Now, I love this idea, because if there's anything that summarizes last week's Parsha, this week's Parsha, it's the notion of chesed. Next week's Parsha, when we come to Eliezer, and right, it's the notion of chesed. Our avos and imos, what made them spectacular, was not their Torah knowledge. It was not how, right? What made them great was that they did nice things for other people. And some of those things, nobody ever found out about it until we wrote it down in the Torah. I'll share with you I'll call it 2B to that. Just an extension of that idea to show you how chesed really weeds its way through every aspect of our parsha. And that is, of course, the salt. As Lot and his family are leaving the city of Sodom, they're told not to turn back. And of course, Lot's wife turns back and she turns into a pillar of salt. By the way, if you ever want someone not to look at something, the worst thing to do is tell them not to look at it. Right? I remember sometimes we were driving in NCSY Kollel in Israel, and sometimes they would announce, you know, nobody look to your left. And of course, like 200 15-year-old boys would all look to their left at that moment in time. So if you don't want someone to do something, the worst thing to do is tell them not to do it. But that's exactly what happens to Lot's wife. They say, don't turn back. And of course, she's drawn and she turns back. I want to share with you a beautiful insight. Rabbi Uziel Malevsky in his Sefer, Ner Uziel, he says, the Medrash tells us, b'melech chata u'b'melech lakachta, that she sinned with salt, Lot's wife, and therefore she was punished with salt. Amar la, tani me'at melech lo'orchim alalo, Lot goes to his wife and he says, can you give them a little bit of salt? Amar lo, she says to them, af ha'minag hara hazeh, Ataba lahanig b'makom hazeh, even this horrible custom you want to bring to our place? Right? What was wrong with salt? Out of all the things that upset her, she was upset about salt? Explains Rabbi Malevsky a beautiful insight, and I'm going to quote for you a sentence here. He says, salt is the universal symbol of chesed because it is unnecessary. One can survive quite well without it. In other words, you don't need salt. Right? I could have lots of guests over, and I can put an enormous spread of food out on the table. Why do I need salt? Why is salt important? Because I want the food to taste good, because it brings flavor to the food, and it makes it enjoyable for the guests. And so when I put salt on my food, explains Rabbi Malevsky, you know what I'm essentially telling all of my guests? I didn't just invite you out of pity, and I didn't just invite you to make a check on my checklist to say, okay, check, I had the Goldbergs over. Right? I'm not just giving you the bare necessities, but I want you to enjoy yourself. That salt represents not just what we give, but how we give it and the thought process behind it. It represents going that little extra mile to make things special for your guests. And so if there's one theme that really captures this entire parsha, it's this notion of chesed. It's the difference between those who do chesed properly and those who do chesed improperly. So idea number one was the beautiful idea of Lot. The three times we meet Lot in the Torah, each time signifying for us Lot's challenge with encountering the world and the culture of Sodom. Lot thinks that he can go ad Sodom, and he quickly learns that that's a slippery slope, and he finally finds himself deeply entrenched in the culture of Sodom, by Yeshe Bishar Sodom, that he's sitting in the gate with the elders and the wise men and the elite, in the upper echelons of society. He wasn't just in Sodom, he was really in Sodom. And therein lies the challenge, the caution to every single one of us, of on the one hand, obviously being in a world, being exposed to society, allowing ourselves to benefit from the positives of that culture around us, but also be very wary and cautious not to allow it to infiltrate our Jewish values too much. Idea number two was this idea of Rabbi Willig, a beautiful idea, the difference between Anashim and Malachim. That for Avram he did chesed, even if they were Anashim, even if they were regular Joe Shmos. For Lot, it was only if they were Malachim, only if Lot got something out of it. And the corollary to that Dvar Torah, the beautiful insight of Ramolevsky about the salt. Why was Lot's wife so opposed to salt? Because it represents going that extra mile for another person. It represents taking, right, not just doing it as a check, and not just doing it so that you could say you did it. the bare necessities and to put a check mark next to it, but doing it because you care about the other person. That's ultimately what chesed's about. Chesed's not about what I get out of it. Chesed is about doing something for you because it is the right thing to do. And idea number three is a beautiful idea. And I always wonder whether to save my favorite idea for the first or for the last. This time I saved it for the last. And this is an idea from Rav Schechter Shlita, Rosh Hashiva of YU. We meet Avram at the beginning of the parsha, Vayera, Elav, Adonai, Be'elonei Mamre, V'hu Yoshev Pesach Ha'oel Kechol Hayom. Avram is sitting at the gate of his, at the opening of his tent. And we, of course, know that why is Avram sitting there? Because he had a bris milah. It was very uncomfortable and hard for him to get up and to greet his guests. Rashi says, Yashav Ksiv, Bikesh La'amod, that Avram Avinu wanted to get up. Amr Le'a Kadosh Baruch Hu Shav Ve'ani Emod. Hashem says, no, you sit and I'll stand. She'asid ani lihit yatzev ba'adas ha'dayanim ve'im yoshvim. Because, says Rashi, there's some form of a judgment taking place here. Rashi says, in the future, Hashem says, I'm going to judge your people. Which, as Rav Schechter points out, means that Avram now, when he is sitting as a judge. He is sitting in judgment of something. Now, what possibly is Avram sitting in judgment of? Right? I bet you never even thought about that, Rashi. Honestly, until I saw this insight from Schechter, I never thought about the Rashi also. I assumed that Avram was always sitting because he was in pain. No, if you look at the Rashi carefully, in the example that Rashi gives, Avram is clearly sitting here as a judge. What is he in judgment over? Asks Schechter. Schechter quotes one of my favorite Gemaras in all of Shas. It's Gemara Maseches Yuma Lamed Hey Amid Beis, where the Gemara tells the following. Tana Rabbanan Ani Va'ashir V'Rasha Bayin Ladin. That a poor person, and a wealthy person, and a wicked person come before judgment. And they ask the person, Mibnei Ma Lo Asakta B'Torah, why didn't you learn Torah? Now, if the poor person comes and says, I couldn't learn Torah because I was poor, then you know what they're going to do? They're going to bring Hillel before this person. And they're going to say, nobody was as poor as Hillel, right? The great stories of Hillel climbing up onto the rooftop to be able to at least get a little bit of Torah because he couldn't pay the entrance fee into the Beis Medrash. They're going to say, no one was as poor as Hillel. And yet, he still became Hillel, right? And then they're going to go to the Ashir, the rich person. And they're going to say, Mibnei ma lo asakta b'Torah, why didn't you learn Torah? And he's going to say, I really wanted to learn Torah. But, with all my stocks and all my investments and all my portfolio, I just didn't have time. And I figured like giving tzedakah was going to be enough. And so I was worried all day with, how much with this and with this options and the markets and I was busy with my wealth. So they're going to look at that person. They're going to say that no one was more wealthy than Rav Elezer ben Charsom. And nonetheless, Rav Elezer ben Charsom was still able to learn Torah and he became a great Talmid Chacham. And then if the Russia comes before judgment and they say, Russia, why didn't you learn Torah? And he's going to say, because I had such a big Yetzirah, and because I was so beautiful and I was so entrenched by beauty and desire. They're going to say, nobody was more beautiful than Yosef HaTzadik. And nonetheless, what did he become? He became HaTzadik. He became Yosef HaTzadik. He became a big Talmid Chacham. Ends the Gemara with the most harrowing words, daunting words. Nimtza Hillel Mechayev Esaniyim. Hillel is mechayev the poor people. In other words, Hillel robs the poor people of any excuses that they have. They can't claim that they couldn't learn because they were poor. No. You put a picture of Hillel there. You say, if Hillel could do it, you could do it too. And if you say because you were too wealthy, they're going to put a picture of Rav Elezer there. He was mechayev the wealthy people. And they're going to say, if Rav Elezer ben Charsom could do it, you could do it too. And if you're overwhelmed with desire and Yitzhara, they're going to put a picture of Yosef there. And they're going to say, Yosef was able to overcome that as well. And so every single excuse that we make, the Gemara says there's someone who is mechayev us. There's someone who they put a picture of that person and say, if that person could do it, then you could do it also. I shared this idea a number of years ago, right after the Ptira of Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel. Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, obviously, for those who knew, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva, had enormous disabilities. Enormous disabilities. And by the way, he didn't come from a yeshivish background. He grew up in Chicago, right? He was modern Orthodox, just like me. Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel had every excuse in the book for why he wouldn't accomplish, why he wouldn't learn, why he wouldn't become a yeshiva. And do you know what he did? He did it anyways. And so I felt at the time that Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel was mechayev, every single one of us, that whatever excuse we had for why we couldn't, why I couldn't reach out to a friend, why I couldn't learn Torah, why I couldn't give tzedakah, why I couldn't do chesed. Right? Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, we put a picture of him in front of our face and we say, if he could do it, then we could do it too. That is mechayev us. It obligates us. It robs us of any of our excuses. Because if they could do it, then we could do it too. Explains Rav Schechter. That is exactly what it means that Avram is sitting in judgment of his generation. Because if you lived at that time, and Hashem came to you and said, you know what, why don't you do chesed? You would say, you want to know, Hashem, why I didn't do chesed? Because I live in a generation of a bunch of selfish, egotistical people. I live in a generation where there's a place called Sodom, and it's so enticing, and I'm so enamored by their culture. Hashem, that's why I really wanted to do chesed, but I couldn't because of excuse A and excuse B and excuse C. Says Rav Schechter, Sha'avram Avinu haya mechayiv la'anshei Sodom. Avram Avinu obligated his generation. He was mechayiv. He judged his generation, so to speak. Dugmas masha amru Hillel mechayiv anim. Just as Hillel obligated the poor people, and Rav Elezer obligated the wealthy people, and Yosef obligated the wicked people, the desirous people, Avram Avinu was mechayiv his generation. Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, Atas siman lebanecha, you are a symbol for your generations to come. Uki'ilu hayahu dayan. It's as if Avram Avinu sat in judgment of everybody else. Because if you made excuses for why you couldn't do chesed, Hashem said, if Avram could do it, then you could do it too. And that to me is the real purpose of role models in our lives. The purpose of having heroes in our lives. The purpose of having people that you and I can look up to and aspire to be as we look at them. And we say to ourselves, if they could do it, then I could do it too. I love stories, not of perfection, but I love stories of imperfection. Those who come to my class know this very well. I love stories not where there's always a happy narrative, but where a person has to overcome adversity to accomplish and achieve what they ultimately are able to. Because I look at those stories, and I say that person is very similar to me. And if they could do it, then it inspires me to say that I could do it too. And that's why we read biographies and autobiographies. That's why we get close to Gedolim and people who we aspire to be like and who inspire us. Why? Because we ultimately say to themselves, if they could do it, if a person with that condition, if a person with that disability, if a person who has such a busy job, if they could do all of the chesed and the learning, then you know what? I could do it well. One of my great rebbes and mentors and role models in life, Rabbi Dr. Baruch Tzvi Galbit, was my mechayev. Right, any excuse I had in the book, I looked at Brian Galbit, I said, if he could do it, I could do it too. Brian Galbit was a physician, a cardiologist. I said, if he wasn't too busy, then I can't be too busy. Right, Brian Galbit was learning Daf Yomi when he was sick and ill. If he could do it, then I could do it too. Any excuse I had, I always looked at Brian and I said, if Brian could do it, then I could do it too. He obligated me to push myself, to aspire just a little bit more. That's the third idea. Beautiful idea from Rav Schechter that's found in Nefesh HaRav. And so, we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. The first idea was a story, the cautionary story of Lot. That the story of Lot is that he tried to dabble in two worlds. That he tried to be Ve'ehal Ad Sodom. That I'm just going to go to Sodom, but I'm really not going to become so entrenched in their society. And within a very short period of time, Lot quickly learns just how dangerous that slippery slope can be. And it's a cautionary tale for every single one of us that we have to constantly be vigilant about what we are allowing into our houses, what values we are allowing to be cultivated within ourselves and within our families, and to be protective of our Jewish values and our Jewish morals. Idea number two was the beautiful idea by Rabbi Willig, the difference between Anashim and Malachim. That for Avram, he did chesed because the right thing to do. He didn't care who you were or what he would get in return. He did it because it was the right thing. Lot would only do it if he was getting something in return, only if they were malachim, only if he would get a little bit of kavod, a little bit of honor as a result. And the third idea, my favorite idea, is beautiful, beautiful, magnificent inspiration from Rav Schechter, found in Nefesh HaRav. That Avram Avinu, what does it mean, the first Rashi, that he sat in judgment of his generation? Who was Avram judging? Explains Rav Schechter that he was mechayev people, he obligated people. That's what it means, he judged them. That if anyone claimed they couldn't do chesed, because of the society and the culture, Hashem looked at Avram and said, if Avram could do it, so can you. And so I encourage all of us to find those people in our lives. For me, it was Brian Galbit, it's Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, it's my Rebbeim, Rabbi Neuberger, Rabbi Willig, all of my Rebbeim. I look at them and I say, if they can do it, then I can do it too. And it has to be someone who's relatable to you and someone who you feel that you can accomplish the same things they could. But I find people in your life that are going to be mechayev you, that you're going to say to yourself, if they could do it, then I could do it too. And once you feel that way, then my encouragement is to go out and to actually do it. So I want to wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos, an inspirational Shabbos. Thank you. Someone just posted in the chat on 10 years at BRS. Baruch Hashem, they haven't thrown me out yet. Please God, they won't throw me out for a little bit of time. But it's really been the richest and most rewarding 11 years now, 10 and a half years of our lives. And as I wrote about in the weekly, it's hard to believe that when I moved here 11 years ago, my son was a very small baby. And Baruch Hashem, my family's really grown up in this community. And as I wrote about in the weekly, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it really takes a community to raise a family. And Ariel and I are eternally grateful that our family has been really grown and nurtured and mentored through this beautiful community, and please God, for many years to come. So I wish everyone a beautiful, inspirational, and wonderful, wonderful Shabbos. Good Shabbos.